Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Hear Our Voices podcast. Let's get some housekeeping in the way. So, I want you guys to go check us out on social media, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. We're on there all the time. If you personally want to speak to me, you can, because I'm going to tell you the truth. Sometimes people can, who are on our team, it's about four of us, they do check the messages. But if you want to personally get to me, I can put my social media down below at Kay the Davis on basically all the platforms, to be honest. If you have any questions, people are DMing me. I am happy to answer any questions. I'm up all types of like parts of the night. It doesn't matter what time it is, I'm up. If I know the answer, I'll tell you right away. If I don't know the answer, I'll find somebody who will know the answer to give it to you. I think it's very important to get the word out there and get the information out to people who need the information. If you see a topic that you like about city feps, things like that, go and check it out. If you don't see a topic that we co didn't cover yet, tell me the topic and we could definitely cover it for you and anybody else who would like to know. So we are happy to get ideas anytime. If you want to be a part of the podcast, guys, check us out. DM us on Instagram or Twitter, and you could be a part of the podcast. You could do it without your face, with your face. It doesn't really matter. Also, if you would like to have, if you have any resources with needs to be a part of the podcast, or if you just want to be part of our resource packet, we would love to have that information. Right now, we're only covering New York City with the resource packet, but we're taking stories from anywhere in the U.S. at the moment. So sit back, relax, and I hope you enjoy the podcast, guys. Thank you for coming in. So my guest today is John. I know him for a couple of years now, and he's doing great work. But before we even get into what he's doing, I want you to really understand how he got to this point. So I want him to tell me a little bit about himself, because most times a lot of people get into this, realm of philanthropy and things like that, but they have a backstory. And sometimes we don't think about how did this person become like be in this business or want to do this thing. But I like to know his backstory first before we get into what he does for the homeless community in New York City. I'm not sure it's all over. I think we actually, because I'm in this I'm part of this group, so I think we have people from other states, I believe too. So it's not only New York that we're helping out at the moment. So yes. So John, tell me a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your childhood and things like that.
Sure. Thank you for having me on, Kadisha. I'm excited to be a guest. I'm John. I am originally from New Orleans, and it's where I was born and raised. I grew up there with a single mom and two sisters, two older sisters. I'm the baby. My parents separated when I was really little, and maybe 4 or 5 or something, and my mom raised us. And I think, not, I don't think, I know a big reason why I've spent my whole career in housing, affordable housing, and homelessness related work was we had a really tough housing situation when we were kids. We were evicted a couple of times, and we had lived with my grandparents for a while when I was little after we were evicted. And I like that the trauma of that, the instability of that, constantly moving apartments, not being able to afford rent, having an eviction notice on the door, from the sheriff that your stuff was going to be taken away. Those kinds of things when you're a kid are really scary and destabilizing. And as I got older, it became more, New Orleans is a really intensely racially unequal place, very segregated and very oppressive in some ways to Black households who have been, struggling against that for, more than a century. And I realized as I got older, that, and I learned and I studied about the history of housing in the US, that my family was white, benefited, even though we were very housing unstable, we never ended up going into shelter. We were able to live with my grandparents, largely, because of a history in the country of housing policy that supported white homeownership and robbed Black households and communities of ownership opportunities.
Right.
When I was in college, I wrote a research, my thesis on the history of the mortgage, which sounds really boring, but it's super interesting. The mortgage we have today, the 30-year mortgage that people use to buy a house with like with a low down payment, comes from the New Deal in the Depression. The government created that financial tool so that middle class people could afford to buy a home, which they couldn't before that existed. But the government would only insure mortgages for white homeowners, and they made banks investigate the home in the neighborhood to make sure there weren't black neighbors, that it wasn't an integrated neighborhood. And they asked all kinds of horrible questions about the presence of black people in the neighborhood. And that over decades, that helped white people get homes who otherwise wouldn't have been able to buy homes and afford homes. And it trapped black, mostly migrants from the South who were moving to northern cities for manufacturing jobs in limited neighborhoods without access to loans to buy homes or to fix homes up. So the housing stock in those neighborhoods fell apart because there was no loans for it to fix it up and no one could buy it. The prices went up and it robbed black communities of home ownership opportunities and wealth and stability at the same time that it gave those opportunities for wealth and stability to white communities. So, you know, my grandparents directly benefited from this. They had mortgages that were insured in this way. My grandfather was a veteran, so he was able to get VA loans. And they owned their home. If my grandparents had been black, it would have been much less likely that they would have been able to own a home. And when you're a renter, as most of us know, you can't, it's very hard to add people to the lease, and usually you don't have space. So if my grandparents were black and hadn't owned their home, they wouldn't have been able to fit, you know, four other people in their house indefinitely, or they wouldn't have been allowed to if they did have the space by the landlord. So, you know, we benefited directly from those policies and were able to avoid shelter, you know, because we had somewhere to go in our network. And learning all that and understanding all that has motivated me to want to change it, you know, and to want to direct resources directly to Black households and communities so that they have the wealth and opportunity, you know, not only to avoid shelter, but to pursue their dreams and their aspirations in the ways that white communities who have wealth have been able to do it. So that's why I do what I do.
So it's, he told
that was a long answer.
It's fine. That's what we're here for. We're here to hear your story and know why you became the person you are today. It's just so interesting that people would probably look at me and you're like, you know, she probably was evicted. He had a great childhood. But it doesn't matter what you look like. I want people to understand it doesn't matter what you look like or what background you come from. Anybody could be evicted. It can affect anybody, any spectrum of person. It doesn't matter how hard you work sometimes. It could just happen. People could become homeless because of any sorts of reason. I try to tell people all the time, it could be from DV, it could be from a fire. A lot of people are only literally 1 month of money that they have going paycheck to paycheck just to survive. And as you heard, his mom was a single mom with three kids. Granted, it was a different time and a different state he was living in, but it doesn't matter. Hard times is hard times no matter who you are, what background you have. It can happen to anybody. And that's what, you know, I want people to get out of this. It doesn't matter who you are. Don't feel ashamed that you went through this thing, because whatever path in life you take, you're meant to take that path to make yourself better and to make the people you come around better. And John does that. I could tell you that he helps out a lot of people. The group that he has people, four different people who are lived experience, two for families and two for youth. He doesn't only help out people with families. You know, our thing is based on like family homelessness, but he helps out other areas of homelessness. And people sometimes we forget about youth homelessness. We forget about family. They only think about people who are usually singles, because I feel like you see that more. And also people on the street. That's not the only people who are homeless. Not because you see us kind of tucked away in a corner and we're kind of forgotten about, doesn't mean it's not happening. It's still happening. And we're trying to really put a light on that with this podcast, giving resources and also telling the stories of people out there who are affected by this, who we don't see, who's invisible. So I'm just really delighted that he came on. I just want him to kind of reminisce about, probably not reminisce too much, but like when you was a child and being evicted, because I think sometimes, you know, we kind of think about the adult, like It happened when I was an adult. My daughter was very young. She had no memory of us being in shelter. But when eviction is happening when you're a child, how does it affect you? What do you remember happening to you? So people can understand how can this thing affect their children. I think we don't think
I
about it
mean,
until
I was
sometimes.
probably 10 years. Yeah, sorry to interrupt. My connection's a little unstable, so I'm sorry if I cut you off.
You're fine, you're fine.
I remember it really clearly. I mean, I don't know how reliable my memory is because it was so scary and I was so little that, I remember the thing that I remember most is the notice, the sheriff's notice on the door. This green piece of paper appears on our door, and I can't remember if it was when we woke up or when I got home from school. And my mom trembling, reading it, and you can tell from your kid, kid obviously doesn't know fully what it means, but you can sense how big a deal it is from how your parent is reacting.
Right.
And my mom, I can read it, and it says like whatever time period we were given, 24, 48, 72 hours, to leave and get all our stuff out. Otherwise it was going to be taken away. But when you're a kid, I immediately start thinking all my bed, all my toys, my books, all the things I care about are going to be taken away. We don't have anywhere to go. I was thinking we were going to be in the car. Where would I take a shower? Where would I brush my teeth for school? Just like all these questions. And we're all standing around me and my sisters, my mom, like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Where are we going to go? What about my stuff? And she can't answer. And it's really scary to be a kid and to see your parent put in that position, of not knowing what's going to happen next. So, I remember a lot of relief, but still some fear when we moved into my grandparents' house because we didn't know how long we were going to be there. They lived outside of New Orleans, and so it was far from my school. And my sister and my mom had to share a bed, and we just still, eventually we got used to it. And we lived there for over a year, and it was fine. My grandparents are wonderful, and we're indebted to them for the rest of our lives for that. That for taking care of us until we got back onto our feet. But those initial moments were scary, we don't realize how much our sense of well-being comes from our home and having somewhere to go to every day that's safe, that's quiet, where you can do homework, where you can play. All of that is really, it's something a lot, most of us take for granted, I think.
That's true, definitely. It's a lot. Did your mother explain what was happening to you? Like what happened to the family? Or did she just kind of like, guys, pack, let's go. We have to go to grandma's house for a little while. How did she do it? Like, I want people to probably, especially for older kids who might understand a little bit more than a 2 or 3 year old, how to probably tell their kids or how not to tell their kids about what's happening to them.
I think she did make sure to know we were going to be safe no matter what, but we were going to be safe. We'd stay together. I think very quickly she called my grandmother and explained to us that that's what we were going to do. And I think once we had a plan, and it felt like my mom was that we had a plan again, that we could adapt. And kids are incredibly adaptable and can live in so many different circumstances. Like, I think that's what, my mom loves us and we're gonna figure it out. And just hearing that over and over, that you're loved, that there's the grown-up is figuring it out, that we may not know exactly what's gonna happen right away, but we'll figure something out. Hearing that over and over, you eventually is soothing. And eventually you can, go back to focusing on the things that kids focus on after
Toys
that.
in school, pretty much. So let's get a little
Cool.
bit into your
You really
work.
care about.
That, yeah, that's true. That's all they think about is children. They don't think about like that much things at all, to be honest. But you'd be surprised. These kids nowadays, I think, are a little bit different than me and you growing up. It seems like they have the world on their shoulders a little bit compared to us. But it's been a different time, so that's how it is. But I think we could get into your work a little bit. What do you do exactly, for the homeless community in, well, abroad in the US, I should say, right now? And how did you initially get into it? How did you kind of start going into that world?
That's really good. So, when I was in high school, I went to a talk on social justice and inequality, and I listened to this guy who was an economist talk something about the history of mortgage lending in the country. The thing that I talked about earlier, how there's sort of these hidden systems that help mainly help white people own homes and buy land, and have been and that our society has withheld from black communities and households that wanted to do the same thing, buy homes, own land, and how that played out over decades, over centuries even, to create white middle class wealth and to rob black households of middle class wealth. And I listened to that, and it just made immediate sense to me. It explains the story I told, of why my family being evicted, we were still able to avoid homelessness, but why so many black families who are evicted in the same circumstances can't, because in that network, there isn't homeownership because of this history. There isn't as much homeownership. There's less, so you're more likely to not have anywhere to go in your network. Everybody you know. More people are renters and can't take you in when you're evicted. And so, even though what you were talking about, Khadijah, that anyone can face eviction, anyone can face housing instability, most households are struggling to pay rent and get by month to month. In a white community, there's more homeownership because of this history. And so when a family does get evicted or is housing unstable, they have another home to go into, or they have some wealth or space to tap into as a cushion. And we have robbed black and brown communities of that cushion. So I went up to the guy afterwards, and I was like, I've been trying to understand that my whole life, which was not very long at that point. I was still a kid. And like, what are people doing about this? Are there jobs? Are there careers in this space? And he told me about, the world of affordable housing, and got me an internship at a community development corporation, which is a nonprofit that builds affordable housing. And I interned for them for the summer. And then that's all I've ever done ever since, basically. I worked for groups like that in different capacities, some of them nonprofit. I worked for this New York City government for its affordable housing department agency that finances the development of affordable housing in New York. I worked for a bank that lends and invests in affordable housing in New York mainly, and also makes grants. And in that work, I started to get more and more involved, not just in housing, but in homelessness and in the systems like shelter systems and other systems that the city has set up to respond to the crisis of homelessness. And it was super eye-opening, because I'd spent at that point, 15 or more years working in affordable housing, and I knew nothing about shelters. And that whole system. So ever since then, I've tried to work more directly, exclusively on connecting the worlds of homelessness and shelter to the worlds of permanent affordable housing. Because shelter is not a solution to homelessness. When you're in shelter, you're still homeless. The solution is a home. It's in the word, it's homelessness, home. And so I'm trying to work to connect those systems and to make sure that we're building homes and connecting people in shelter to homes, not just services, but to homes.
Hi guys, welcome to the end of the Hear Our Voices podcast. Thank you for tuning in and coming for next week to hear part two of John's information and what he does. I hope you enjoy. Also follow us on all our social media, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and the things, the link will be down below if you want to talk to me. I also have my link in there and you can talk straight to me. Anyway, guys, I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.